5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Then a log.
As the authoritarian left grows in power and influence, it seems like prison might actually become the safest place on Earth. Kind of like the end of a game of Monopoly. I got some questions for you. Do you support the nuclear family? Do you want borders? Do you oppose the New World Order? Do you believe men are men and women are women? Are you Christian? Do you think 2 + 2 = 4? Do you actually believe the Bible? Then get ready to be labeled a political dissident, an enemy of the state. But here's the good news. You might be cellmates with Owen Schroyer while he's not hogging solitary, of course. In fact, we might need to release all the criminals to make room for more constitutionalists, people who question elections, gun owners, people who work out, men with families, white people, those who ask the wrong questions, but especially anyone that has that bigoted, anti-Semitic, patriarchal, fascist mindset we call the Baptist bias.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us for a special episode of The Baptist Bias. I'm here with my co-host, Ben the Baptist. How's it going, Ben?
It's going good. Excited to be here for another episode of our show. We've got a great guest, great topic. Let's get this thing on the road.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this particular interview. We've got a return guest, Owen Schroyer from InfoWars, going to be joining us. How's it going, Owen?
It's going good, and I have to say, though, I hate to do this right out of the gates, but as a former competitive Monopoly player, you do not want to be in jail at the end of the game. That's actually bad news, so I don't want your audience to get that bad advice. You do not want to be in jail at the end of Monopoly. That means that you're in a bad place. It's good to be back. It's good to be back on the show. It was a joy to moderate a debate that you were in recently. And I feel like I've told this story so many times by now that I'm pretty much the expert on my own story, if you will. So I'm ready to talk about what I went through and really try to get Americans to understand just what we're up against right now with the totalitarian left.
Yeah, I usually land on a boardwalk, so it's really safe for me to be in jail. That's why I said that, but... But it's great to have you, and you've done some really epic interviews already. I know you did Tucker after you came out of prison, and I know you went on, I think, Timcast and really several others. I think you and InfoWars Rob did a recent interview about your prison experiences as well. And, of course, I don't want to necessarily be a broken record, but I do want to still cover a few of the same basics. I'm also interested, it seems like from some of your posts or some of the things that I was following while you were in there, you talked about reading the Bible, and I definitely would be interested in asking you about that. But you made some videos too, kind of like a pre-prison video and like a post-prison video. I don't know if I want to necessarily play them, but we can show the picture up there of at least what this video looks like. What was going through your mind as you're about to be put into federal prison here?
Well, I was able to mentally prepare myself, you might say, since I got about a month or so knowledge in advance that that I was sentenced to prison. So it wasn't like they hauled me right out of the courtroom. So I was able to mentally prepare myself a little bit.
How close is that to the reality now looking back?
You know, it's a funny thing, actually. It feels like an entirely different world. It feels like it was an entirely different life. And while I was in there, it felt like it was forever. While I was in there, it felt like it was forever. And, you know, the countdown, it could never be soon enough. And now that I'm out, it was like it was just a completely different world, a completely different life. But my mindset going in was, you know, I talked to my family before. I talked to my friends before. I try to find some ways to look at the positive. I try to find some ways to kind of fortify my own mind. One example would be, I think about, you know, I have grandparents. A lot of my family were former military. I think about the time they spent, probably a lot harder at times than me going to prison for 2 months. I think about the veterans that I talk to every day and what their commitment to country, to God and country is. And so I kind of just looked at it like my service in a way. I think, you know, I looked at it like this is my duty, my service to the country to go through this. You know, a long time ago, I've accepted that everything is part of God's plan. Sometimes that goes in your favor. Sometimes it doesn't, but it's all part of God's plan. And so, you know, you just kind of learn to take the good with the bad, I think, when that's your mentality. But, you know, the final thing I wanted to kind of go in with, was a message of positivity. I knew a lot of people were going to see that, being as it was my last video before incarceration. And so I wanted to go out with something positive. I wanted to go out with something inspiring. And so I recorded it and I said, I'm going to be in here 60 days. I'm going to find a way to improve myself. So in the next 60 days, I hope that you hearing this can find a way to improve yourself. So that was kind of my approach, say, in the last 48 to 24 hours. And then right before I went in.
Well, and again, you know, this is federal prison. It sounds like you must have been a really bad criminal. What was the charge that they even gave you for this?
It was a misdemeanor charge, entering and remaining on restricted government grounds. It's basically a minor or lesser, they say, trespassing charge. Very few people, if any, have ever gone to prison. In fact, nobody's ever heard of anybody that's gone to prison with this charge. There were other January 6th defendants. There might still be some in the future. There were some other January 6th defendants that had the same charge. They didn't have to go to prison. They didn't deal with any of the probation that I'm dealing with either. So that's basically the charge, is they were claiming that the Capitol grounds that I was on that day were restricted government grounds. And so that was the misdemeanor that I eventually pled to. And you would obviously ask, well, what about, and I'm certainly not asking for anybody else to be charged or incarcerated, but the question here is obvious. Why am I the only one of the hundreds of thousands or more that went onto the Capitol grounds that day? And I think we got a pretty good idea why. It's obviously political persecution,
right?
But we didn't even want to take that argument to the judge, because we kind of flirted with it a little bit. And the response from the government was, well, our investigation isn't over. So if we would have tried to say to the judge, well, certainly this is clearly political persecution, Owen Schroyer is the only person that is being charged with this of all the people. Well, they said the investigation is ongoing. So eventually they did end up charging some other people, and maybe there might be some more charges before the end of the year even.
Right, because, I mean, we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people that are standing right by you in the same spot. I mean, it's not like you were just in some isolated place by yourself. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't even think you entered the Capitol. Is that correct?
Yeah, I never stepped foot in the Capitol.
And we had lots of people that were entered in the Capitol. So obviously it's clear persecution against you specifically, being a voice that is powerful, inspiring a lot of people, inspiring a lot of young individuals. And, you know, I think what's encouraging, though, is that even though you did have to go through this, you didn't have a woe is me attitude. You weren't saying like, well, this just, you know, darn my luck or something, but rather you said, hey, I want to get better. I want to come out stronger. And not only did you say that, hey, you're still on the front lines fighting. And I think that says a lot to your character, because I think a lot of people after getting this persecution would say, I'm kind of done fighting the machine because I'm the only one that's really suffering here. Because let's be honest, there's very few people that are going to prison for specifically what you went through. Now, I know there's other January 6th prisoners, and I'm not trying to undermine what they're going through. But specifically, I mean, this is like nothing. You're just out there at a very iconic event, a very special event. I mean, this is something that a lot of people are saying, hey, we don't know that this election is legitimate. We feel like our country's being taken from us. And, you know, it was a big deal, especially when people breached the Capitol. I mean, it's every news station. It was a major event. A lot of people were kind of wondering what's going on. It was very chaotic. I believe, isn't that, it's about the same timeline when Trump was banned from Twitter. I think like
I
almost
think that happened afterward, but it was based on January 6th, shortly afterward, based on erroneous claims of what they said that Trump said on January 6th. They claimed that he incited violence when he did the complete opposite.
And, you know, it kind of makes me feel like, you know, are we living in a Bolshevik type revolution or something? Is there really, you know, our government, has it been seized or taken over? I mean, what is your viewpoint when it comes to this type of persecution? Is it over? Is it just getting started? Like, where do you see this headed?
Well, it's certainly far from over, at least until maybe Trump gets back into office. But even then, the truth of the matter is, I think at this point, the reality is, as long as the Democrat Party exists and can still get any semblance of power back, then this threat is always going to loom. And that's not an endorsement of the Republicans or even to say that the Republicans wouldn't be somehow above this. I think that the Republicans could do something similar as well. I mean, we've seen some of the response that they've had to protesters on college campuses, not to go into another topic, but I mean, we've seen that. We've seen this anti-Semitic bill that is extremely authoritarian and anti-First Amendment. But I think the threat right now, the direct threat, is Democrats, at least in the practical sense that we've seen applied. And so the thing that I try to explain to people, because we tend to look back on history and history repeats itself, and we want to learn from history. So you can talk about all kinds of revolutions and authoritarian regimes, but I try to humanize it for people. And until you've been in my position, it's hard to understand this. And so the way that I explain it is, when you're in that courtroom, and the courtroom is basically a triangle situation, you have yourself with your defense attorneys right here, and then you have the government, the prosecuting attorneys, the U.S. attorneys right here, and then at the top you have the judge. And the understanding or the expectation of the American people going into this situation is that justice is the goal. Justice is what everybody in the courtroom is searching for. But when you are in that corner of the triangle that I was in, you quickly realize that that's not the case. That's not the case at all. Justice, in fact, never comes into the equation. And in fact, it's not even a process. Evidence doesn't matter. Truth doesn't matter. It's a rigged system against you. And so when you go through that, it really hits home. It makes the whole thing a reality aside from just the conjecture and the commentary on it. It really makes it a reality. And so for a lot of people, I think it's really hard to even understand what that's like to go through that. And, you know, you talk about getting out and going back on the front lines. It was never a doubt to me. And so I've worked with Alex Jones for, I guess, 8 years now. And I've worked with Roger Stone. I have followed Donald Trump. And, you know, these are three men that never gave up either. So certainly I was not in a situation where I was ever going to give up. Maybe they thought they could break me with all of this. The point being, these principles, these values, these cornerstones of our constitutional republic, one of them being justice, another one being free speech, you know, I've had to learn the hard way that that's not something that I've had as an American. These are two rights of mine that have been I have been infringed upon. So I think that when you go through that, unfortunately, you realize how bad it really is when you realize that there's no hopes of justice. Because if there's no justice, then, you know, there's really nothing else. Anybody can just be thrown away by the government without a real courtroom, without a real defense, without even the opportunity to have justice. So it becomes very real in that process. And unfortunately, I had to go through that. I'd wish it on nobody. I'd wish it on not even my enemies.
Yeah, it seems like Trump's court cases are also kind of like a kangaroo court, not legitimate. We've actually had
100%.
We've had two legal cases. We had a trial that was honestly, frankly, a kangaroo court. And then we ended up paying to go to a higher level. And the judge didn't even allow us to have the hearing. He literally just already had made his mind up and just didn't even let us present any evidence. And it was just over. And it was kind of flabbergasting to think like this is what our justice system has turned to. And, you know, they just don't care about rule of law. There's really no accountability for a lot of these individuals. And you can kind of tell that the political pressure or their personal biases or maybe even their friends really have a lot more to do with what's going on in the courtroom than, like you said, justice, trying to weigh the evidence, trying to have a fair show. And that's not to say that all judges are bad or that all these legal proceedings are bad necessarily, but it's clear that there's a lot of bad things going on in the courtroom in America, and it's not even just limited to Trump. It's going on in your case. It's going on in other cases. The January 6th trials and those individuals, it doesn't seem like they're getting a fair shake either. But, of course, it happened. You went to federal prison, and I think initially you're put in solitary confinement. And honestly, I've thought about this, and it's a gruesome punishment. Just the idea of just having no interaction with any human. I'm kind of curious, like, what exactly did they give you in there? Like, do you even have access to, like, books or anything? Or is it just literally you in a padded cell?
Well, I'll get into that in a second. I want to address one thing that you just brought up, and I think this has become something. When I really got out, I focused on this messaging, and every time I get the opportunity, I want to bring this up, especially because we as conservatives tend to overlook this because we tend to land on the side of, you know, pro-law enforcement, pro-police, and so we kind of lose the mission through all the fog when it comes to justice reform. Another problem, my case was obviously political. But another problem with the justice system is many times in all kinds of different cases, justice never really enters the equation because what you have is prosecuting attorneys, federal attorneys, U.S. attorneys, and their goal is to have a high success rate. Right. So what they do is they overcharge you. So whether you know, maybe you're caught with drugs or a money laundering situation or whatever. It can be anything. And so they just overcharge you to such a degree that for a minor crime, you might be facing decades in prison. So that way they work it down to a plea deal. You think that this is getting off easy. Your lawyer tells you to take it because it's getting off easy, when really that should have been the only charge you ever faced. And you should have been able to take it to a trial with a jury of your peers and argue it in front of the judge and then have a fair decision and a fair sentencing. But they overcharge dramatically. So you take the plea deal and then they have their success rates high so that they can climb the ladder, claim they have a 100% success rate dealing with this. And then the judge, he's all about filling the prisons. He likes the incarceration aspect. He gets to fill the prisons. And so when you add that into the justice system, you realize that, yes, my case was political, but that doesn't mean that my situation in the courtroom was unique to me just because it was political or politically motivated. So that's another problem with the justice system, is this process that rewards high incarceration rates, high charge rates by prosecuting attorneys. And so even in other cases, it's almost impossible to get justice. Now, here's the situation. When I first went in, and it was all totally unexpected. So it was like, as soon as I got in there, I got hit with a shock because you prepare yourself. I talked to other federal prisoners, what to expect. You know, I did as much research on the prison as I could to try to figure out what to expect. And then boom, you go in there and the first week you're in solitary confinement. That was a COVID protocol. That was all a COVID protocol. So it was total nonsense. Of course, didn't have COVID. There was no reason to put me in solitary for a week. But nonetheless, I get out, I make a phone call, and then I get sent to the special housing unit. It's known as the SHU. It's basically the prison inside of the prison. And once again, I hear this almost the entire time, or really with any part of the process, dealing with attorneys and courtrooms and the incarceration and the probation. Never seen anything like this before. So I got put into the SHU, the special housing unit, the prison in the prison, for a phone call. Everybody involved in the process had never heard of anybody going to the SHU for this. Everybody that was in the prison, long timers, had never heard of anybody going to the SHU for this. So again, it was more politically motivated. And I was basically told that by people inside the prison that this came from the higher ups. It was off record, so I'm not going to go too much further into detail past that. When you're in there, your access to anything is obviously very limited. You can't leave the cell. You get 10 minutes to shower 3 days a week. It's the weakest shower you ever had. You basically push a little button and there's a dribble that comes out of the wall.
Oh, man.
The water's freezing cold. The food is horrible. You get your 3 meals a day. At first, you don't want to eat it because it looks so gross. By day 3 or 4, you can't wait to get it because you're starving. I lost at least 15 pounds. I don't remember. For the first time since high school, I was under 160 pounds. Today, I probably weigh maybe just shy of 180. I'm usually between 175, 180. So I lost at least 15 pounds in the process. Pretty much books are your best resource there. Now, I was lucky because I had a bunch of people sending me books. So I kind of had like my own library to choose from. They have a prison library, but it's, you know, there's not too much good reading material there.
What did you enjoy reading?
The Bible mostly. I really enjoyed reading the Bible. There were a couple other books that I found really easy to read and pass the time that were kind of just more informational. Like one was called like Stories of the World or something like that. And I just learned crazy things about different cultures. So those were the two books that I liked doing. You know, I got mailed crossword puzzles. So those were kind of big ways to pass the time. I actually have a list of all the books I read that I'm eventually going to write. I've already written my own book. I just need to kind of editorialize it and get it ready for publishing, which has been a bit of a process. But books are the way to pass time. I mean, if you can sleep, they don't turn the lights off, but if you can sleep, that's a way to pass the time. You don't even have any access to a clock. So the only way you can even keep track of time is based off of your meals, which are not exactly timely every day. You have a pretty good idea what time it is based on the meal. But the prison guard does a walk every 30 minutes. So you might try to just time everything based off of that and when you get your food. I mean, that's pretty much it. I think the 21 days, I believe it was, that I was in the SHU, I think they let us outside maybe once. I think they let us outside for a 15-minute rec. It's just it's a cage outside that you can just be outside in. So I think we got maybe that once. It's hard to remember, but that's pretty much your situation. You're just laying in your bed. Now there's only so much you can do. It's not very big at all, but you have enough room to do push-ups or do, you know, lunges or something like that. So I tried to exercise as much as possible, but there's really not much. You try to sleep as much as you can. You know, you try to read as much as you can to pass the time, and that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it when you're there.
Ben, you know, after having a hard day at work, this seems like nothing. You know, a hard day at work compared to that, I mean, that's intense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you brought up the fact that they gave you, and I know that there's more complex issues here, but they gave you food that at first was disgusting, but then you could not wait to eat later because of how hungry you were. Could you provide maybe an example of what they fed you, if possible?
I mean, you can imagine. Imagine like the worst version of Michelle Obama cafeteria food that you possibly can, and that's basically it.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I mean, I just remember basically cafeteria food.
Is it like basically the Vegas vacation when they go to the buffet and you guys just getting the green slop and the red slop or whatever?
I wouldn't say it was like that. I mean, it was food. You knew what you were eating. Like, you knew the beans were beans, or the chicken was chicken. So, I mean, it wasn't like that, but it wasn't enough to fill you. And there was really no taste to it. So it's not very, it comes in a little tray, and a lot of the stuff, because I have a really strict diet. And, so a lot of the stuff I just wouldn't even eat ever outside. Yeah. But, like I said, when you're in there, that's it. You either eat or starve. Yeah.
Well, reading the Bible, is this something that is kind of like the first time maybe you went cover to cover in, or what was kind of your experience with that?
Probably the first time I ever went cover to cover. Now, I was born and raised in a Catholic household. I went to a Catholic grade school. I went to a high school called Christian Brothers College Prep. It was a former military academy. So I wasn't no stranger to the Bible. I'd been reading the Bible my entire life. I was brought up on the Bible. So I knew the Bible well, but yeah, first time probably that I ever just read it straight up cover to cover, I would say.
So anything that kind of stuck out to you, or is there anything, maybe that you learned for the first time that you thought was really interesting while you were in there?
A lot stuck out to me. In fact, I have a whole list. I've got it right down here, actually. I could grab it and maybe pull the Bible. All right, give me 1 second here.
No, you're good.
I would be just super angry if I was in that situation. That's all I'm going to say.
I've thought about it, and, if you didn't get books or something, I mean, I've read and, watched some videos of people.
Hold on, it's actually in another room. Crazy eventually.
Yeah, you're good.
No worries.
Yeah, I've seen some people literally go crazy in solitary. Right. And I could see that, especially from a time perspective. You just don't even know when it is.
You don't know what time of day it is.
It kind of makes me think of a movie that I really love. It's called The Count of Monte Cristo. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but a large portion of the film.
Just assume I've never seen any movie
you
bring up.
Yeah, that's probably true. A large portion of the film, the main character's in basically kind of like a solitary style prison sentence, but it's like indefinite. It's just for the rest of his life. And he is just like marking on the wall with rocks like the days or something. And then he eventually just gives up.
It's not how humans are supposed to be living. It's not the environment that humans are supposed to be in. And it makes you feel like a caged animal.
Yeah.
And that's how they treat you.
This is it's definitely cruel and unusual.
It's cruel and unusual punishment. They locked them in a box, essentially. Is what they did.
There's nothing in the Bible that teaches solitary confinement.
Absolutely not. And it's disgusting.
So, again, our prison system definitely has issues. The Bible just doesn't even have people locked up even just in a cage with other people. Obviously a temporary holding cell until maybe sentencing, but it should be so brief that it's not really the main punishment. But today it's just locking people up in a cage and... it's just sad that happens to a lot of individuals. But, a lot of people in the Bible went to prison. Joseph went to prison. He's kind of the first one. You have Jeremiah, Jesus, John, Peter, Paul. You've got Silas. The list goes on. Some pretty good people went to jail. So, you're in good company there. Oh, and I don't know if you got your notes with you.
I do right here. And I would say the one thing I do remember was when Paul was in prison, and it was a Bible verse. I know I have it in here. I'm not the best at memorizing the verses, but it talked about the God rattling the cages, opening the gates of the prison so he could walk out.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I felt. I bet that's probably in my notes here. What you said, it was Acts 16.
Yeah. So they actually sing praises at midnight, and then God opens the doors. And Paul and Silas are there, and the jailer is afraid of being killed because all the prisoners are going to be released. But the Bible says he fell down in verse 30 and he asked them, "Sirs, what must I do to be saved?" And they said, believe on the Lord Jesus Christ and thou shalt be saved. So it's actually one of the coolest stories in the Bible because it also gives the gospel, like how to be saved and how to go to heaven. And it's through like believing on Jesus Christ specifically just by faith and what he did. And it's kind of symbolic there because it's like the doors of the jail are wide open and they just get to go free. And that's just kind of how the gospel is, that all of our sins are just wiped away through the blood of Jesus Christ, and we get to go out free. I really also like the attitude of Paul and Silas there. They're very encouraged, and they're encouraging themselves. And that kind of reminds me of your testimony a little bit, of you encouraging yourself. But I do want you to share, you know, what you got from this passage.
Well, you said it was Acts 16, right?
Yep.
And I'm guessing verse 24 through 26. I have it written down right here. I don't know if you guys, I'll try to put that on the camera.
Yeah, we can see it. Nice.
Yep. Acts 16, 24.
There it is.
26. So these were all my favorite Bible verses while I was in there. I plan on eventually getting into this. I don't know. Maybe I'm avoiding it because I don't want to relive all of it, or it's probably more just that I've been so busy. So somebody actually sent me this. It's a scripture confessionals. And so I would wake up every day and read one or two before I would go to bed every night. And then I would use the back empty pages to just write my favorite verses. So it's funny because that one is in here, obviously. But yeah, anytime I would read something that really stuck out to me or resonated with me or I felt could be applied towards what we're going through now, that I would take this out and I would write it down and revisit it later. So that was kind of my process throughout the days when I would read it is that stuck out to me, and I'd write down the verse, and I plan on revisiting it later and then saying, oh yeah, this is why this meant something to me, or oh yeah, this looks like or sounds like something that we might be going through now, some valuable information here.
Well, and you know, interestingly enough, you kind of bring up that passage, and it does seem like your sentence ended up getting, it ended sooner than what you were originally sentenced for. I don't know the exact number. Was it like 47, 48 days maybe that you served? What was the?
Yeah, I was supposed to serve 60. I think it was right at 50. Yeah.
Okay, around 50. So you got out there a little sooner. When did you find out like that they might send you out there sooner, or that you're going to get out there free? Like what, how did that work?
Well, this might surprise you guys to find out, but they don't really give you much information when you're in there, and they don't really treat you with much respect or dignity. So I think I found out 48 hours before. And so there was, you know, they're never clear about what or why. Some of the people inside think it was because the First Step Act that was signed by Trump. Others said that's not the case because I didn't even have a long enough sentence for that to kick in. I think that only happens after if you have like a year sentence that they can kick that in. So some people say, no, that didn't even apply to you. So there was some kind of debate on that. Others think that it was because my name was brought up at the BOP, the Bureau of Prisons hearing. They thought that because Matt Gaetz mentioned my name, they were fighting for another $2 billion and they couldn't answer any questions about me or my treatment or anything like that. And it was a bad look. So they think that maybe that was why they wanted to get me out of there. Now they're petitioning for the $2 billion again. So some people think that might have had something to do with it. You know, either way, to me, it was still an act of God, whether it was through the hearing or whether it was through the prayers or whether it was through a First Step Act. You know, to me, it was God's plan. And so, but yeah, I think I got 48 hours advanced warning, I think is about what it was.
Well, you bring up Acts 16, verse 25 says, and at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises unto God, and the prisoners heard them. And what sticks out to me is that here we have these two men in prison, and yet they are singing praises to God. The positivity that they're exhibiting in spite of their situation. And I brought this up when you went to get your notes about the feeling of anger that would permeate at least me in a situation like that, to be incarcerated wrongfully for political speech as a political dissident in a country that's supposed to be one that offers freedom. But here's my question for you, Owen. Were you ever blackpilled? Was there a day or multiple days where you were just totally blackpilled and down or even just pissed off at the backwards nature of our justice system, where someone like you is incarcerated while criminals are running around free, going up and down our streets and terrorizing people?
I definitely hit a low point. I remember it distinctively when I hit my low point. I wouldn't say I was blackpilled. I don't even know if it would be fair to say that I was angry. Maybe depression, maybe depressed. I'm kind of naturally a high dopamine level guy. I really enjoy life. I really enjoy what I do. I enjoy eating and exercising and spending time with friends and family. So to kind of have all that removed from you, you know, you might say that could be clinically described as depression. But I specifically remember my low point. It was like day 6 or 7 in the special housing unit. So we're talking like 2 weeks in and being confined. And really it was the only thing that kind of kept me going at that point, 'cause I had no access to mail. I had no access to write a letter or receive a letter yet at that time. I had no access to anything, really. It was just me and a Bible. I was able to get a Bible, which even that was kind of a lucky thing, you might say, or you know, an act of God. But when I got in there, it just so happened. And again, you know, a lot of this was set off the record, so I just want to be careful. But a lot of the people, you know, that worked in the prison, believe it or not, they're fans of mine or you know, just patriots. And it was kind of eerie because you hear it a lot. Oh, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job. So it's kind of eerie when you get that all the time. But let's just say because somebody on the inside in the shoe recognized me, he said, you know, hey, I got to lock you up and that's it. You know, anything you want. I said, can you just bring me a Bible? Can you just find me a Bible, bring me a Bible. And I mean, it was this old tattered Bible. He probably dug it out of, you know, some compartment or drawer that hadn't been opened in years, but he found it for me and he gave it to me. And so, I mean, that's what basically got me through. That was the only thing I had in those times. But yeah, I specifically remember the low point. And then once I kind of hit that, I you know, it was like hitting rock bottom and then being like, okay, well, it doesn't get any worse than this. Every day that goes by is a day less in here. Then I was able to start getting some mail. Then I was able to start writing some letters. And then I was able to start getting some books. So, you know, I don't know if it's fair to say black-pilled or, you know, angry or anything like that. I mean, maybe just depressed. I don't know how else to put it. But it's just, you know, it's just the feeling of helplessness, hopelessness with no outlet at all. To distract you or to give you access to anything in the outside world. And so for me at that time, it was basically only the Bible. That was all I had. And it was the only thing that helped me get through the hardest times in there, of time passing slowly, depression sinking in, whatever you want to say.
Well, Pastor Shelley, that's the natural response, isn't it? To have a little bit of a low point, at least at some point during your prison sentence, which is why those passages like in Acts chapter 16 are just so astounding and jump out of the page for me, because it just goes to show that, hey, it is possible to be in that position and yet find joy in the Lord.
Yeah, Joseph serves in the prison and actually does well. And obviously that's probably a different experience than being in the shoe or being in solitary. A special kind of cruelty there. But you know, it's definitely nice to hear, you know, some realism, because I think that most people, if not almost all, are going to have some moments of feeling down or some sadness in that experience, because that's got to be super hard. I mean, I think it's realistic to have some highs and lows in that situation. I'm kind of curious from a perspective of like a broad perspective. Do you feel like maybe this caused you to draw a little closer to God or things that are spiritual, having gone through an experience like this?
Definitely in those moments. I mean, it's hard to say. I don't know if I could say that I'm closer to God today than I was before I went in necessarily. But definitely, you know, in those moments when you have more time to meditate, more time to pray, more time to appreciate the things that you don't have, and then you get out and you do appreciate them. So, I don't know if I would say I'm closer to God now than I was before I went in. I would say that if anything, I just have a grown appreciation for what God has given me and the opportunities and everything that I have in my life. I would say that the appreciation for that, and I guess reaffirmed God's plans, reaffirmed God's power, the power of prayer. So I don't know if that's necessarily me saying I'm closer to God than I was before I went in, but it was definitely something you kind of take out of there with you and into the, you know, the post-incarceration life. And again, you know, just to kind of level things out and humble things here, I didn't spend too much time in there. I mean, 2 months overall. There's guys that go in there for years and decades. And so there's a reason why people become more religious when they're in there. You'd think that's, hyperbolic considering the situations you're in, but there's something there. There's something real about that, you know, crying out to God or feeling that or getting that through. And then taking it out with you. So there's something definitely to that. Some of the men in there were very spiritual. It felt like it was kind of one end of the spectrum or the other. Either you're very spiritual and a big believer, or you're basically, you know, an atheist. So, I mean, it feels like that's kind of, it's kind of just both far sides of the spectrum from my experience.
When you were in there, did it feel like people, knew who you were, or did you ever feel intimidated by other prisoners?
No. You know, the situation that I was in at my prison, Oakdale FCI, it's a low security prison, and it's a prison where they have a lot of people that work their way down. So there's a lot of guys that were in a high security or then a medium security, and now they're kind of on the last leg of their sentence and they just want to get out. So people don't really like to fight. In a situation like that, there were some politics, meaning, you know, prison gangs and stuff like that, but it wasn't too political because of that reason, because most people are trying to get out. And maybe a practical example that I could give is most federal prisons, child molesters, child abusers can't walk the yard. They have to stay either in the SHU for their own protection, or they're never going to leave their jail cell, because if they do, they're going to get beaten up. Because a lot of these prison gangs, it's part of their creed that you beat up child molesters if you ever see one on the yard.
I like
so
that.
This. It's funny because the prison gangs seem to have a more serious approach of justice toward child molesters than the actual justice system.
Right.
But that's another story. So
it'd be
so
dangerous for the Bidens to go to prison.
So I hope they don't get the diary. So outside of a couple child molesters getting beaten up, there really isn't too much activity like that at this prison, because everybody's trying to get out. It's not like a medium or a high security where guys have long sentences and they might need to earn some cred or do a gang initiation type of thing. So on that aspect, I never really felt there was never really any situation of intimidation. But the truth is, When I got in there, immediately a couple guards recognized me, a couple inmates recognized me. And so when I'm sitting in there for a week, you know, it kind of, I guess, maybe ended up being an advantage. People talking about me like, oh, you know, the guy up there, you know, the guy up in that cell, it was this guy. So there was, you know, there was kind of this mystique growing, if you will. And then because they, you know, a political prisoner, it's kind of badass to guys in there. A political prisoner, they, you know, they kind of view that as is like a badass situation. And when you're the only guy that's ever been to a federal prison, to anybody's knowledge, that has on a misdemeanor, That's another thing where they're like, damn, this guy's only, he must like, what he really do? So then my nickname was Misdemeanor. So then after I get out of the solitary and get sent to the shoe for 3 weeks, the mystique just grows.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was back in solitary, everybody wanted to talk to me. Everybody wanted to hear my story.
He's a legend.
A lot right. of people wanted to get on my show to tell their stories about how right. corrupt the justice system was, or talk about their book or what they're doing. So it was never really a situation where I felt like I was ever in any danger or anything like that. I mean, like I said, there were a couple prison guards that you could tell didn't like me for certain reasons, but the vast majority of them did like me. They didn't want my time in there to be so hard. The things that I had to go through all came from the top. I mean, the very top. And these guys had no control over it. They basically told me that. So, but yeah, that it was a little bit, maybe, you know, you think about it going to prison, you can't help yourself, but, in a low security prison, like the one I was in, it was probably a low level threat, but yeah, of course I was worried about my food being poisoned, but luckily, you know, all the food is basically at random. So they'd have to poison the entire prison in order to poison me. So that was a comforting thing when I discovered that. And when, you know, you talk to all the people that basically most of the guys that run the prison and they're like, hey man, like your work, you know, sorry you're here. It was a bit of a relief.
So kind of from a broad perspective here, you talked about wanting to better yourself. So, you know, what would be like your biggest takeaway from this experience, or what did you feel like maybe you did better yourself in, if you could point to something specifically?
You know, like I said, it's so hard to say because it feels like it was a different world. So I kind of just have to go back to when I got out and try to remember. And, you know, just appreciating life outside of a cage. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Just appreciating life outside of the cage. You learn to love the little things again. I mean, even just eating a meal that tastes good or that you want to eat, you know, for like a week, you just savor that. I think though, what I really take away, and I can't help myself, this is just kind of my life, my mind is, you know, this issue that needs to be addressed of justice reform, you know, because of, I don't want anybody to go through what I went through. I don't like nonviolent people in prison. I don't like political prisoners. You know, obviously I'm in an all male prison, about 1,000 inmates. And most of the guys that are sitting in there every night are nonviolent offenders. And most of the guys that are sitting in there every night are either fathers or grandfathers. And they just, there's just no purpose. They're not a threat to anybody. They'd be much better off. And I think everybody would be much better off. I mean, even if you wanted to just put them on house arrest so they could be with their sons and their daughters and their grandkids. So, you know, I kind of really, the one thing that definitely sticks is, you know, criminal justice reform is prison reform is a big issue of mine. But there's no doubt when you get out of there, you learn to appreciate things more. You learn to appreciate just basic things like a hot meal or a hot shower. And I would imagine it would probably stick a lot more if I was behind there for longer than 2 months. But definitely for like a month or two, it, you know, every time you can have a hot shower, every time you can eat a meal that you want, it's you remember, and you really just don't take it for granted.
Yeah, I can see having a greater appreciation for life. And, you know, some of the early shows and interviews and stuff, it just seemed like you had a big smile on your face. It seemed like you definitely were really enjoying coming back into society. And I can't even imagine. So, you know, I definitely appreciate the courage to not only go through that and stay strong, but also, like I said, keep going, you know, say, hey, you know, you may have shut me up for, you know, 50 days, but hey, I'm going to still, you know, get out there and put the truth out there and be a journalist and hold people accountable and try to make a difference. And say like, hey, just because I went through this, I don't want other people to go through it. I think that's a admirable, you know, viewpoint, because I think a lot of individuals would take that just take an L after that, or be discouraged, or really in the censorship war that we live in today, how many people today are not saying unpopular things or dangerous things for fear of losing money? That prison's not even necessarily on the table. How much more would they cower if prison or these kind of things were put on the table? And, you know, our country, to have freedom, needs individuals that say, hey, I'm going to say the truth. I'm going to do what's right. If you're going to throw me in prison, you know, do what you got to do. But I'm not going to sit here and just allow our country to just be taken over by communism or evil or whatever regime is waiting in the dark corner. My boss always had this quote. He said, the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And I think that that's definitely true. Did you have something last you want to ask here, Ben?
You remember your first meal out of prison? I hate to keep bringing this back to food. I'm hungry, obviously. Go ahead, Owen. Do you remember at all?
Yeah. It was a Raising Cane's chicken in, where were we? Oh, man, somewhere in Louisiana. I can't remember now. It's skipping my mind. But we were at a Raising Cane's chicken. It was probably like 2:30 or 3 in the morning. They were open inside 24/7. And really, it was actually hard to eat it at first because you're so used to the prison slop. And so it was, you know, it's actually kind of strange, but you could read all about these stories. Especially, again, guys that spend a lot more time than me, you can't even eat normal food for a while. You have to, like, start really basic with, like, pancakes or just, like, French fries or something that you were used to while you were in there, or, like, oatmeal or something. I ate some Raising Cane's. I couldn't finish it. It just I don't know. It didn't sit right. And then I didn't eat for, like, 24 hours. And then there's a restaurant here in Austin that I like to frequent. It's a steakhouse. I'll give them a free shout out because I love them. Perry's. And so then I went and I was starving, and I finally chowed through a nice big filet. I think I had a salad, some mashed potatoes, some Brussels sprouts. I think we might have even gotten a chocolate fudge cake. So after 36 hours out, after the first meal kind of was like a non-starter, then it was time, and then I turned it on. I had the steak, and I was good to go.
That sounds great.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm sorry if I'm torturing you right now.
Yeah, you kind of are, but that's all right.
Rare steak, dripping mashed potatoes with butter and cheese.
Appreciate the description there. Just to build off what you were saying, Pastor Shelley, I think part of it as well is to intimidate Owen and people like Owen Schroyer from continuing to speak out. That's the idea, is like, if we can persecute these guys, even threaten them with prison, maybe even put them in prison for a couple of months, maybe that'll intimidate them into silence and make them withdraw from the culture war. That's the reason they do what they do. And to double down in response is to say, you know what? Your persecution didn't work on me, and it never will. And that's powerful, I think.
Yeah. And again, you know, we really appreciate you, you know, giving us time and sharing your experience with us as well. I know you've gotten a lot of attention, and so but well deserved, you know, staying strong, fighting the right fight, bringing attention to the truth and trying to steer the course of our country back. And we don't want to take, you know, more of your time than you're going to give us. And you're really gracious to give us this time. We'd love to, I guess if we're ever in town, we need to go to Perry's so we can get you another one of those filets. But
there will be no shortage of filets. There's no shortage of filets here, I promise you. And I would say in closing that, you know, a couple just cliches, but, you know, God never gives you a test that he knows you can't pass, or that he wants you to go through to strengthen yourself. And so I just kind of look at it like that. And, you know, I was raised Catholic. I have a St. Christopher pendant that I wear. I'm trying to awkwardly show it with the microphone here. And in the story of St. Christopher, he serves evil, and then he serves good. And he realizes what the difference is and how much better it is to serve good. And as soon as he gets that dichotomy, he's like, oh, wow, I should have been serving good this whole time. And there's a part where the legend says he was a giant and he used to help people cross the river because he could walk it. And it was the current was heavy. So he'd put people on their shoulders and he'd provide them a way across the river. And then one day there was a tiny man that needed crossing. And he put the tiny man on his shoulders and he crosses the river and he notices as he's crossing that the man is getting heavier and heavier. And he's like, what is going on? And finally he gets to the other side and he puts him down. He says, I don't understand what happened here. And he says, I'm probably butchering it exactly, but something like, I'm the Lord Jesus Christ. And now you know what it's like to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. And so it was this reaffirmation to do good, this reaffirmation that you can get through this. I'm not going to give you a test that you can't have. And so, you know, I just try to carry that forward, and whatever growth or attention I get because of my persecution, I just hope that I'm able to, and I pray for God's light along the way and that I'm able to use my life and my talents for whatever he wants me to.
Well, God definitely cares about you, and he wants everyone to be saved, and, you know, he wants them to go to heaven and not only be saved, but also live a life that's pleasing unto him. And we really appreciate, you know, your time. I look forward to, you know, chatting again about this topic, but we appreciate you giving us some time to share your experience about prison. I really was excited to get to interview you on this. And so any things you want to plug before we go?
Sure. Tune into my show every day on the InfoWars War Room. AmericanElection.News is a good link for that, or OwenSchroyer.show. I also have a Rumble channel, rumble.com/Owen, and I'm pretty active on X at OwenSchroyer1776. Glad to be back on the show. Maybe I'll be back here again or moderating another debate that one of you guys are in, but it's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks again for joining us, and God bless. Make sure to follow Owen and all those places. And Ben, I want to talk about, we're going to do another show here on Saturday. It's going to be a recap show from our Tuesday night show. And I think a lot of people are really excited about this. So I wanted to plug that. But, you know, thoughts on Owen's prison experience here. What were your thoughts?
Well, when I first heard about it, I was extremely blackpilled. Dylan sent me a text, and he said, isn't it crazy that Owen is in prison? And I responded and said, yeah, kind of seems like this country just deserves to get nuked off the face of the planet. And I don't really mean that, of course, but, you know, it's just the frustration that oozes out of me, the frustration that I can't help but feel when we have animals like these drag fag queens defiling children across the country, and they get to walk away free, and yet someone like Owen has to spend multiple months in prison. And there are others. Joe Biggs is in a much worse situation right now. There are other January 6th people. And whether you agree with the January 6th protesters showing up or not, that's not the point. The point is, it's political speech. The point is, if the left did it, then nobody would have been incarcerated for it. Democrats have been questioning the 2016 election for years without any ramifications. I guess it's different when they do it. So it just goes to show you, we have a two-tier justice system in this nation. It is no longer the America of yesteryear, unfortunately. And it's only going to get worse. But the good news is, at least we have the Lord Jesus Christ. And if God is for us, who can be against us, is the question Scripture asks.
Yeah, I definitely think that it seems very likely that God kind of intervened and helped Owen get out of there. And I hope that, you know, from that experience, it does help him draw closer to the Lord, that he, you know, makes sure that he gets saved and understands, you know, the true gospel, and that he can get out of the real prison, you know, which is hell. Nobody wants to go to hell. And of course, the Bible makes it abundantly clear that salvation is not by faith and works. It's by faith alone. And so people need to realize that salvation is a free gift. It's not something you have to earn or work for. And unfortunately, a lot of churches, not just Catholic, but a lot of Christian churches, they teach that salvation is by works and how you live your life. And, you know, of course, we've got the Baptist bias, and salvation is actually by faith alone, just by believing in Jesus Christ. And once you're saved, you're always saved. And we love going out there and preaching the gospel to people. And so, you know, hopefully through this show, people will end up hearing or finding out about the gospel and getting saved. I mean, that's part of the reason why we even do the show, is to reach new people and hopefully that they'll go down the true rabbit hole of the gospel and get saved. I know when we kind of talked about this show, we kind of had some different ideas. I think that you wanted to do a fanfare show, but I've been trying to broaden my horizon and talk to all kinds of different people in the hopes of reaching more with the gospel inevitably. What do you think about that?
If we focus on us for no more, what's the point? We should try and broaden our audience. I think that's the responsible position to have, is what can we do to reach new people who have not yet laid eyes on your preaching or some of our friends' preaching, the new IFB in general. I want to mention a verse, Isaiah 59:14, and judgment is turned away backward and justice standeth afar off, for truth is fallen in the street and equity cannot enter. If that doesn't describe the United States, I don't know what does. I think that perfectly describes our country in 2024. And you are absolutely correct. What is the answer? Well, how about the gospel of Jesus Christ? And thankfully, the Bible makes it clear about what it takes to be saved. One of my favorite verses on this is Titus chapter 3, verse 5, not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to his mercy he saved us, by the washing of regeneration and renewing of the Holy Ghost. And so you want to talk about being in bondage to sin and the inevitable consequences of that after this life, that being hell. Well, there is a way out. It's believing on the Lord Jesus Christ and receiving in that very moment, not a lifetime, not a process of time, but in that very moment, eternal life.
Amen. And again, the name of the show, The Baptist Bias, it kind of goes without saying if all we were ever going to do was stay within a Baptist sphere, right? So the whole point of the title of the show is that we're going outside of our echo chamber, going outside of our sphere, but we're bringing our Baptist bias with us.
Of course.
It makes me think of Paul saying, you know, under the weak, I became weak. Under the Jew, I was a Jew. So he's talking about going out there, trying to find some commonality with individuals who are not saved, so that maybe eventually, you know, through that relationship or an opportunity, you're going to give them the gospel, you're going to expose them to the right thing, and they're going to get saved. And of course, you know, this show, we've been really broad as far as what kind of guests, what kind of shows. I mean, if you told me I was going to do a flat earth debate, I would never believe you, because that's just, you know, in my mind, just...
I wouldn't believe you.
Categorically, just like such a insane idea. I would have never thought that, but it's like our most popular show so far, which is kind of crazy to think about that as well. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think some people that are sincere and, you know, it's not that they're stupid, but they've kind of fallen into the trap of a stupid idea, have gotten sucked into weird things. And maybe through us exposing, you know, some of those ideas, maybe we can win a few people over.
You can normalize them.
I don't think that very many people trapped in the flat earth ideology are very willing to learn, or they're very willing to hear new ideas. It seems like most of them are kind of already settled on their opinions. But, you know, perhaps somebody said they're trapped under the dome. That might be apropos. But it seems like there is maybe potentially a few people that you can win over here and there. And of course, I think the Bible says we should earnestly contend for the faith. So, you know, that to me is going out there, challenging different ideas, challenging different viewpoints. And I think it also helps balance us as well, that we don't create these strawman arguments, and that we're actually in the real world talking to real people about their viewpoints, their ideologies. And it helps us to get a better idea of what people really believe, what they're really like. You know, I think, of course, soul winning helps us get an idea of what people believe as far as salvation. But in other topics, it's also just interesting to see what people think and to challenge them. But I'm excited about Saturday's show. You want to check our email group. We actually have a way you can join. It's baptistbias.com/join. And you can join our email list. Send us an email if you'd like to be on there. We send out emails when we have some of these just spontaneous shows. Of course, you want to check out our final for the season, Tuesday, 8 p.m. We're going to have Pastor Anderson back on to premiere our Daniel series. We're going to be doing episode one of the Daniel series. And we're not going to have our regular show, but every Tuesday at 8 p.m., we're going to be releasing the next of our Daniel series. So we'll be doing episode 2 the following week, 3, 4, all the way to episodes 12. And so we'll be on a little bit of a break as far as the regularly scheduled podcast. But we'll have the Daniel series going. I may still do several other just random streams. We may do go back to the Friday show where I do the sword drill. So that's another thing you could check out on Fridays at noon.
Can I send a question in for that, or are you not going to answer questions if I send
you them? Might say, like, put a different name, like,
all right,
just, you know,
just so my question actually
right.
gets read.
Yeah, exactly. Gotcha. You know, this is Carl the Baptist, right. You know, or whatever. What's your pseudo name, just so I know, and I won't answer.
I'm not going to reveal it. You just told me to use a different name, so you read the question. I'm not revealing what my pseudo name is.
That's anytime someone asks a question, I'll be like, is this Ben? just to
well,
test
I just
them.
Remember you were at a conference and they did a Q&A via the internet, and I was the
right.
first question you received, and you looked like, how could I get away from this guy? Like, you rolled your eyes, you're like, I can't get away from him.
No, you ask good questions, so I appreciate the questions. Don't be too hard on yourself.
All right.
But you know, I'm excited about that show. I'm excited about Tuesday's release. Tell us a little bit about the Daniel series. This is something you've been working on for a while now. How do you feel about this thing getting out there?
Well, I have no excuse to not know a little something about the book of Daniel after watching every sermon like 50 times. But no, it's been a great project. Appreciate the privilege, honestly, of getting a chance to help out with this and to get it completed finally. Much anticipated. Many of the folks who follow our content know that this was a project originally in the works going all the way back to 2018 is when the sermons were preached, and a little bit of delay in getting it released and went from one owner to another as far as the footage is concerned. But I think we've been able to put together an exciting series with some intriguing B-roll, eye-catching B-roll. And of course, how could you go wrong when you have Pastor Anderson preaching?
Yeah. I was there in person, so I actually got to
you
hear
were.
The sermons.
There's a few crowd shots with you.
Yeah, I'm kind of over in the corner
or
something.
You may remove them, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm excited to release this project because it's been a long time coming. I know a lot of people donated to it. They're excited to see it. Also, I want to do a shout-out to a soul-winning marathon trip that's going to be happening at the end of May. It's in Chicago, specifically May 24th and 25th. Sure Foundation Baptist Church is hosting a big soul-winning push and preaching event. I'm going to be there. Pastor Thompson is going to be there that Friday night. We're preaching. If you want to find out information, you could always email us, but you could also email surefoundationbaptist at gmail.com, and they are hosting the event. They're putting it all together. Reach out to Sure Foundation Baptist Church if you'd like to participate. If you're anywhere in the Chicago area, we would love to see you out there, and I'll be preaching in the flesh. So I'm excited to go to Chicago. I've only been there one time before. That was with you and me going out there to visit Dr. Stringer.
Dr. Phil Stringer.
And he's going to be preaching for us later this year again at Steadfast. And
can't
I'm excited
wait.
About that. Also, you know, I've tried to see if I could schedule him as a special guest interview for our show. So maybe I can get him to come on and talk about things. He's in a specific group that's pretty cool. It's the King James Bible Research Council. You've looked into this. Pretty cool group. What have you learned about that specific association?
They're doctrinally sound, and they provide scholarly, biblical, and intellectual defense of the King James Bible. And that's what I like the most about them.
Well, I love Dr. Stringer's story because he wasn't even King James only. And he explains that he was kind of actually even researching why not to be King James and ended up switching and recognizing, well, actually the King James position is the one that makes sense.
Right.
And now he's a champion of the King James Bible and an ardent supporter of the King James Bible. He was in our movie, The Preserved Bible. You got to check it out, preservedbible.com. But he also did a full interview with us. You can check that out online too. Really, really outstanding guy. Really love Dr. Stringer.
Can we get him there maybe?
I don't know. Maybe. We should think about
that. If he'll be in town, maybe we could have him sit right here.
Yeah, we could have him on the show in person.
In person.
Oh, man.
Just a thought.
We could. Let me think about that because I need to figure out and plan when he's going to be here physically because I think he's visiting a couple churches while he's in the area. So I'm not exactly sure. But make sure you're following the show, guys. Thanks so much. We had over 200 people watching. Of course, we try to take call-ins. We're definitely going to take call-ins on Saturday. So if you've been wanting to call in or you feel like you got missed, you want to check in Saturday. It's going to either be in the late afternoon or in the evening when we have the show, but we're definitely having it. It's going to possibly be a pretty long show, but there's a lot to unpack. I'm excited to expose some of the insanity that was said in that Flat Earth debate and just, you know, kind of put it to bed a little bit. I had a lot of cool slides, a lot of cool show images and stuff I wanted to share. Didn't really get to share all of that because it was... you know, never going to happen. I had like over 80 images. That was never going to happen in that 2-hour show that we had. So you can only show so much, but I'm excited to get a chance to really walk through it, talk about some of those things. What were your thoughts about the debate? What just give us a kind of a high level here. What did you think?
Well, when you drive past a flaming car crash, you can't help but look over and go, what's going on there? Rubbernecking, I think, is the term.
Rubbernecking.
For it. Rubbernecking.
Sorry. Yeah.
I think is the term for it. And so, yeah, entertainment for sure. Great television, drama, suspense, everything you're looking for in a live stream. I think that debates, for me, they're always going to be that way because it's an opportunity to have our worldview challenged. And, Pastor, you brought up that you felt more sharpened after this one. And after this debate and surely after the Red Heifer debate as well, I think that's an added positive to these confrontations is that you get a chance to really study hard on a particular topic and learn perhaps a little more about it in the process.
Yeah, to me, it made me think like WWE or UFC where it's just all this wild card and it's crazy and you don't know
anything
what's going to happen.
It's live it's radio. Like... We start off where we're fighting over
you're wondering if the show's even going to happen.
Is it going to happen? Isn't it? That is...
It was like, what is going on?
Drama. But, and it's good. I mean, think about it. Think of all the reality shows.
Yeah.
What do they sell reality shows on? Oh, look, this person had a fight with this other one. Tune in next week to figure out what happens. The news media does this all the time where they bring people on to debate and they bicker and fight over. This is what people want to watch.
Well, and of course, we're going to still have some other shows. I think there might be a scheduled debate on Standing for Truth channel at some point with somebody that believes in work salvation. And, you know, I'm really scared that they're going to convince me, Ben.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to be having to do like tons and tons and tons of hours of debate prep on that. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So, you know, we're trying to get out there. We're trying to reach new people. Support the show. You can join us on Locals. You can watch the show on Apple Podcasts. There's a lot of other things. What else can they find us on?
Well, they can find us on, you brought up Apple Podcasts. They could also find us on Spotify. That's the big one as well. Google Podcasts as well. And don't forget to check out thebaptistbias.com.
Yeah, thebaptistbias.com. Check out Ben on Twitter at BenTheBaptist.
Thank you. It's BaptistBen316. BaptistBen316.
Make sure to give him a follow.
And I also want to say that if you're listening to our show and you haven't heard Pastor Shelley preach, then you need to just search Steadfast Baptist Church on Rumble. Steadfast Baptist Church on Rumble. And his last sermon was on Zechariah chapter number 3 and what I thought was an informative Bible study. So check that out, Steadfast Baptist Church on Rumble. I think you're missing out if you don't listen to our preaching.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for a special episode of The Baptist Bias. Thanks so much to Owen Schroyer for joining us. And look, folks, everyone's got a perspective, but you need to get The Baptist Bias.